website and check out our Spinatrom. I've been Peter, your host, One Fine Morning. I'm here every final Tuesday of the month. It's been a treat. And you've been listening to WORT 89.9 FM, Madison listener-sponsored community radio.
WORT thanks its listener sponsors and Willie Street Co-op, offering products for playing in the dirt, including seeds, seed starting supplies, soil, and other gardening products. More information is available at williestreet.coop/gardening.
For over 10 years, Mama Cares has been there for local musicians in their time of need, whether to help with medical expenses or other personal calamities. Madison Area Music Association invites you to Mama Cares' 10th Anniversary Ball, Sunday, March 30th from 3 to 8 p.m. at the High Noon, featuring live performances by Sam Ness, Gin Chocolate and Bottle Rockets, and The Jimmies. Help your local musicians and enjoy some live music at the Mama Cares 10th Anniversary Ball, Sunday, March 30th from 3 to 8 p.m. at the High Noon Saloon. You're listening to WORT Madison.
Debbie Russ with the BBC News. Hello. President Trump and his intelligence chiefs have played down a mistake in which a journalist was invited onto a messaging group where he saw plans for a U.S. attack in Yemen. The U.S. president said it was a glitch and that he stood by his national security adviser, Michael Waltz, who added the journalist to the group. The CIA director and the head of U.S. national intelligence told a Senate committee that no war details were disclosed. John Bolton, who served as national security advisor in the first Trump administration, gave his reaction to the leak.
I don't have words to say what my reaction is. I just can't imagine it. Tulsi Gabbard, the director of national intelligence, and the director of the CIA, Radcliffe, these are the people who keep the secrets. These are the people who set the example. These are the people who set the standards. And they participated in this Signal group chat and apparently, as far as we know, never said a word. It just, there's no explanation for it. There's no justification for it. That's for sure.
The White House says Russia and Ukraine have agreed to stop attacks on shipping in the Black Sea. It said both sides had committed to giving safe passage to vessels and pausing strikes on energy facilities. But the Kremlin says safe shipping will only be enforced once sanctions are lifted from Russian banks involved in international trade in food and fertilizers. Here's James Landale.
It hasn't been the center of the conflict for quite some time, but it is definitely a step forward. Now, how have both sides agreed to do that? Well, the Russians have clearly agreed to do it. The quid pro quo is that they are going to get help in return from the United States to allow their agricultural products and their fertilizer products to get to the international market, help with shipping and things like that. In other words, they are seeing it as a revival of the old Black Sea grain initiative that the Russians pulled out of back in 2023. In terms of the Ukrainians, well, the agreement that they've got is that the United States will remain committed to support the exchange of prisoners of war, the release of civilian detainees, and the return of forcibly transferred Ukrainian children.
A Sudanese war monitor has accused the military of killing hundreds of people in an airstrike on a market in the Darfur region. The emergency lawyers group said the bombing of Toura Market was a horrific massacre. The army has denied carrying out the attack. Scientists have discovered a new species of dinosaur that had a pair of curved, menacing claws. The creature's fossilized remains were unearthed during the construction of a water pipeline in the Mongolian desert. It's from a group known as the Therinosaurs, large reptiles that stood on their hind legs and usually had three claws on each hand. But this new discovery only had two. You're listening to the latest world news from the BBC. 150,000 residents of the South Korean city of Andong have been told to evacuate to escape raging wildfires. This resident, Guan So-han, who was sheltering with other evacuees in a school building, described how strong winds blew the fire towards his home.
The wind was so strong that I couldn't stand still. The fire came from the mountain and fell on my house. Nothing could be done. Then an evacuation order was given. I went to the shelter. I can't describe that feeling. Those who haven't experienced it won't know. I could only bring my body.
Turkey's government says more than 1,400 people have been arrested in connection with the mass protests that have swept the country since last week. The unrest was sparked by the detention of President Erdogan's main political rival, Ekrem İmamoğlu, on corruption charges. Mustafa has been out protesting and blames the police.
They are allowing CHP leaders, main opposition party leaders, to speak on the streets for a few hours, but then they use heavy violence against protesters every night for the last 6 days.
Brazil's Attorney General has said that the former president, Jair Bolsonaro, led a criminal organization that planned to seize power by force at the end of his term in 2022. Paulo Gonet was addressing the Supreme Court, which began considering whether Mr. Bolsonaro and 7 other former government officials can be tried. He said they plotted a coup attempt to prevent the inauguration of his successor, Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva. Slovakia has declared a state of emergency to deal more swiftly with an outbreak of foot and mouth disease. The first case was reported last Friday on a farm close to the Hungarian border. There have been outbreaks in 3 nearby farms since then. Some 2,000 animals are expected to be culled. BBC News.
Do you care about workers and labor issues? Do you want to make a difference in our community for working people? Then join the Labor Radio team. Labor Radio is a weekly show that covers labor, social justice, and political issues that impact workers. And we need your help. As a Labor Radio volunteer, you will have the opportunity to report on important labor and social justice stories in your community, interview workers, activists, and experts, produce and edit your own stories. No prior experience is necessary, though a connection with labor is a plus. We will provide training and support. All you need is a passion for worker justice and a desire to amplify the voices of working people. To learn more, contact Volunteer Coordinator Adrian Rainey at 608-321-9583 or head online to WORTFM.org/volunteer to fill out an application. Labor Radio, a voice for workers.
Good afternoon. You're listening to A Public Affair. This week, the climate advocacy group Greenpeace was ordered to pay $660 million in damages to Energy Transfer, the oil company behind the Dakota Access Pipeline. The protests against Apple in 2016 and 2017 were organized by the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe and Indigenous Water Protectors. Greenpeace peacefully supported the protests, but was charged with defamation by Energy Transfer. Now, a North Dakota ruling in favor of Energy Transfer could have far-reaching effects on First Amendment rights and is an alarming instance of a corporation using a lawsuit to intimidate activists. Greenpeace is appealing the verdict. In light of these developments, on today's show, we're re-airing a conversation from 2018 in which host Esti Deneur speaks with women on the front lines of oil pipeline protests, including Anne Whitehat, Paulette Moore, Jermaine Tremell, Manju Dutt, and Rebecca Kimball. Because this is a rebroadcast, you won't be able to call in with questions, but we hope you enjoy the show.
No change without struggle. No one in power ain't giving up nothing. No change without struggle. No one in power.
WORT 89.9 FM, listener-sponsored community radio, Madison, Wisconsin.
And hello, welcome to A Public Affair. I am Esti Deneur. We have a very full show today. We are starting today's show with a discussion about a water protector camp that you probably have not heard about. It certainly has not received the kind of notoriety that Standing Rock has. And so to talk with us about l'eau et la vie, which is French for water is life, we have Anne Whitehat. She is a Sikangu Lakota from South Dakota. She's a mother, an herbalist, a water protector, lives in Louisiana, is a member of the Indigenous Women's Advisory Council of the Loyola V camp, the BioBridge Pipeline Resistance Camp in South Louisiana. And hello, Anne. Thank you very much for joining us today.
Good morning or good afternoon. Thank you so much for reaching out. We sure appreciate you.
Yeah, thank you. So talk to us about the camp and the Bayou Bridge pipeline. What are they?
Yes, thank you so much for, like I said, for reaching out. And I'm going to give you a quick little overview here. So the Bayou Bridge pipeline is the tail end of the Dakota Access Pipeline, which is the parent company is the Energy Transfer Partners Company, our international company. And so this pipeline, as you know, is taking the oil from the Bakken oil fields down through Dakota Access Pipeline and snaking through the United States and down across Louisiana, from Texas to Louisiana, and into the swamplands and the bayous of the Atchafalaya Basin. The Atchafalaya Basin is like the largest swamplands in North America. There's like a ton of wildlife there, home to like 500,000 or some crazy bird migrations through, you know, through the world. And so it's a very, very important place. It's also a stronghold for indigenous people and slaves and Cajun folks. But you know, indigenous folks, indigenous folks and black folks who were escaping slavery in the Trail of Tears went into the swamplands to survive and set up their life there. And so this really truly is a stronghold and a sacred place. And so the Dakota Act or the Bayou Bridge pipeline is about 90% finished, going through the not the basin, but there's a sort of a higher land in South Louisiana that's gone across, and now it's into the basin. It's a very critical swampland areas, and we've been doing this work for about a year and a half or so. We have a small camp called Louis La Vie. We're on 11 acres, which we bought that was on a on the pipeline route. And so we did this strategically, one, to so that we could set up a strong resistance to the pipeline, as well as to be a hub for social activism and work like that in South Louisiana. So we've been busy. We have a small camp. We don't have a large infrastructure, so we can't host a lot of people. So we ask folks to please come down and help us. We've been doing this work. We've had over 100 direct actions this year alone. I'd say as of yesterday, we have probably, 17 felony arrests, and probably over about 25 misdemeanor arrests that we're still going through the court system on that. But earlier in August, on August 1st, the state passed an anti-protest law that was funded by a group. The acronym is ALEC, and I can't remember exactly what it stands for, but they're basically a corporate arm of the oil and gas industry that is putting these blanket legislation out there to different states that have pipelines going through them. And they're giving very harsh penalties for folks like us, water protectors, who are working to stop these pipeline projects. Now, this pipeline project in South Louisiana, we're talking about environmental racism on many levels, which, of course, in Dakota Access Pipeline, it was the same thing. They're going to put these pipelines in the poor communities and risk our water. And the same thing down in South Louisiana. So It's running through, and it ends at a black community called St. James. It's a free town of St. James. It's one of the first free black communities in South Louisiana. And so they're like the hub. They're in a place called Cancer Alley. And they're already in a place where they're receiving toxic chemicals all around them. They're at the highest rates of cancer. And this company, this town now has no way out. One of the chemical companies came and they bought this land, and so they blocked the access, so there's only one way out. Bayou Bridge Pipeline is going to be a terminus there. And mind you, all of the oil that's going through this pipeline, through the whole United States, we are not going to see a drop of that oil in the United States. It is all for export, okay? None of it's even going to be refined here. It's all for export to foreign countries. So we're risking 300,000 people's drinking water, including the city of New Orleans, the Houma Nation, and we're the community of St. James is even further risking, because we all know that Energy Transfer Partners pipelines across the world they leak once every 11 days. One of those pipelines is either leaking or it's blowing up. So we've been through the court process with a coalition of groups that we're working with. So we've got court cases on private land issues where the pipeline is trying to come through, and we've made our first one of our big stands there right after August 1st and experienced really brutal arrests of water protectors out there in the basin. And they'll first felonies under this new law. And so we've been increasing those, and those are very contentious because the company did not have permission to go across that particular easement on that private property. They had no agreement with the landowners. The landowners asked us, please come here to our land in the swamp and protect it. And so we did. We were welcome to be there. And so they're charging us with felonies for being on that land where we were invited to be, where they have been trespassing. And so we're asking for a couple of things. You know, one is for the pipeline one to stop, but to give St. James a way out at the end of the terminus, that the community that's facing, you know, the huge risk, as well as, you know, bringing up other issues surrounding just pipeline development across the country and the world, and particularly here in the United States. Yesterday, we had a huge a direct action where indigenous women, we had three women that locked down to a 50-foot crane yesterday to stop the construction and bring awareness to missing and murdered indigenous women and the man camps and the whole social disaster that these pipelines bring into our communities. So these women locked down yesterday, and now they're all facing felony charges for doing this. Mm-hmm. So we're asking folks to, to support us, to support us if you can. We're a small encampment, but we're very strategic. We've been very successful, and we're run by women. Our camp is mainly one, our Indigenous Women's Council runs the camp. We have a vetting process for anybody that would like to come and join us. And we ask that, don't be offended, but we really do need to ask and look into people, who's going to come and join our community and help us. So we ask if people want to join us, please give us an email, reach out at resist@nobbp.org. We're on Facebook at Louis Levy Camp, No Bayou Bridge. And, of course, our GoFundMe we have as well to support us, and we're asking folks to support our legal our legal costs, just the cost of being out at the camp and being out on the waters and doing this water monitoring, because we've been doing this for really intensely and on the ground for, like I said, for the most part of this year, really, for the whole year. And we've been successful in stopping the pipeline construction to delay their deadline. They were supposed to be finished with the pipeline at the end of October. Mm-hmm. And now they're saying they won't be finished until the end of December.
If you're just tuning in, this is a public affair on WORT 89.9 FM Madison. This is a rebroadcast of a 2018 conversation. We hope you enjoy it.
So we're doing, we're really doing the work on the front lines, and we need support. We need people to reach out and share the story.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask you, you mentioned that yesterday three indigenous women were blocking the machinery, and what they were trying to call attention to was missing and murdered indigenous women. Do you want to make the connection between that and the pipeline?
Yes. The connection between that and the pipeline is that the pipeline brings in workers that aren't necessarily from our communities. They don't hire workers from our communities or from the community. And they're set up these camps called man camps. And, there's horrific stories of man camps in the oil fields up in North Dakota, the sex trafficking, and there's documented missing and indigenous women along those routes where the pipeline and the man camps are. And so we're bringing awareness to this issue and the relationship that it has to the pipelines in terms of, the raping of Mother Earth, the disrespect of Mother Earth, and how we as women are an embodiment of Mother Earth ourselves. And so it really is a direct attack on women, on indigenous women in particular. And so we're bringing that to the forefront in this particular action, as well as stopping the pipeline for another day. And mm-hmm. it was a key space along to do that. So, you know, there's strategic actions to bring awareness as well.
Mm-hmm. And another thing I would like you to talk about is the attack on the media, which, of course, the president that we have now is leading that attack in every way possible. But in the case of Loyola V, and you say differently, you say Loyola V?
No, yeah.
You do say law, okay. in the case of Loyola V, and also really in the case of Standing Rock, as we'll be talking about soon, media, you know, people who came to document what was going on there, what is going on currently in your part of the world, are being attacked too, are also being arrested. I actually saw the video of a local reporter, a woman, being arrested with you in a brutal way. I was talking earlier about Joan Campbell here, an elder of our community, small woman, who was arrested by four really large cops as though she was dangerous, as though there was something she could do that they needed more than one. Same is going on with you. So talk about that attack on the media and the attempt not to get that information out. I think that's what it seems to me to be doing.
That's exactly what it is. It's an attack on the media and attack on our First Amendment rights, and really trying to stop us from getting the story out about what is happening in South Louisiana. But the attack on the journalist is real, okay? Karen Savage has been on the ground with us, documenting the story, reporting the story firsthand, and this was the second time that she has been arrested. The first time she was arrested was earlier this summer. Folks were doing an action in kayaks, and they pulled her and two other water protectors and literally put them on the easement, which is, considered a felony. So they weren't doing anything. They were in waters that were navigable waters, which are legal, that are very legal for us to be on, for anybody to be on. But so that was the first time she was arrested. And really, if you see the videos, you know, they're just right in her face, stopping the camera, just very disrespectful and really just really doing illegal things. And then this last time, she was targeted. We were both targeted, actually. But there she was doing nothing, not one thing. They fabricated charges against both of us. She was walking down to the boat to get on the ramp, or on the ramp to get on the boat. And yeah, there were some police there at the ramp. They went down and targeted her, pulled her out. Were very pretty rough on her. She's a small woman, but as she was being arrested, I ran up to the levee because that's the only place that we can get cell phone reception or any reception. Now, mind you, this is a very remote area, okay, mm-hmm. very, very remote. So I run up to the levee, and the jailer at the jail at St. Martin's Parish, Louisiana, said that there were no warrants for Karen Savage. So they were down there telling her that they had warrants for her arrest. So I went back down there, and then they snatched me.
Yeah.
And, same thing, warrants for my arrest. There were no warrants in the system. And we asked them to show us the warrants. And the guy actually said, there'll be warrants for you when you get there.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah. So, and there weren't.
No, they did. They were. They made us wait.
They did.
And then slapped us. Then, as soon as they were finished typing it up or whatever, slapped it down on the counter and said, there's warrants.
I see. Well, Anne White Hat, we have four other people waiting to get on the show, but I want to say I lived for a while in Sunset. I still go sometimes to Lafayette. I love that area. It is incredible, as you described. I really would like to encourage our listeners to read about the Atchafalaya and to look at photos. I really want to thank you for what you're doing. Can we check with you maybe once a month and see how things are in your...
You bet, that'd be great.
Okay, and again, people, if they want to come, they should write to resist@nobbp.org, and there is a GoFundMe place where people can help with money, and Loyola V Camp is on Facebook. So you can...
Correct.
Yes. Thank you so much, Anne Whitehat.
Thanks so much, y'all.
Really,
thank you. Have a good day.
You too. Really appreciate it. Anne Whitehat, Sikangu Lakota from South Dakota, mother herbalist, water protector, and she has been a member, she still is a member of the Indigenous Women's Advisory Council of the Loyola V Camp, the Bayou Bridge Pipeline Resistance Camp in South Louisiana. Let's go to a little bit of a trailer and we'll be back with a bunch of additional amazing women.
When the call was made, we didn't waste time. We came out here. We asked permission from our elders in Mexico and they said, yes, go protect the water, the sacredness, and our sovereignty.
Our ancestors were amazing keepers of what we refer to as time and space. So they left us much information as to what was going to come about. The people from the north were the people of the eagle. The people of what we now today call South America, the people of the condor. That we would come back together and bring that unification back to the continent.
If you're just tuning in, this is a public affair on WORT 89.9 FM Madison. This is a rebroadcast of a 2018 conversation. We hope you enjoy it.
And we are back, and that was just about a minute from a brand new documentary film created by Paulette Moore titled The Eagle and the Condor from Standing Rock with Love. And Paulette is one of the women who's with us today. Hello, Paulette.
Hello, Etsy. It's great to talk to you.
Etsy, Paulette.
Etsy.
Thank you. And also on the phone with us is Jermaine Tremel, an elder Lakota who participated in, who is from Standing Rock event originally, and participated in the big action that lasted for many months. Hello, Jermaine, and do I am I saying your last name correctly?
Yes, good day. How are you? I'm Betty Weste.
Thank you. And with you is also your niece, Manju Dat. Hello, Manju.
Oh, good morning. How are you?
Okay. Thank you. And in the studio with us is Rebecca Campbell, elder person of District 18 in Madison, my district, and also a woman who went to Standing Rock, partially, definitely, as an elder woman. She brought a declaration of solidarity from the City Council of Madison and was arrested at Standing Rock. Hello, Rebecca.
Good morning, Esty, and thanks for the kind words about my dad.
Don't mention it. And it was actually at the Eagle and the Condor ceremony that Rebecca got arrested, one of quite a few people. Paulette, why did you choose to concentrate on that in your film?
Well, for one thing, Rebecca is a dear friend and spoke and understood so powerfully the forces that were going on at Standing Rock. And the fact that at the Eagle and the Condor ceremony, which happened on October 10th, Indigenous Peoples Day in 2016, the fact that she was arrested, the fact that the people who were there were in prayer, in ceremony, so beautiful, that action. There were no workers there. It was people right in the heart of Lakota, Dakota country, in the heart of this continent, that came together to really pull the forces of this prophecy of the eagle and the condor. And I felt that that situation was such an important understanding of the greater story of Standing Rock that really has not been told. There is a lot of focus on the violence. I felt we needed a focus on the ceremony and the prophecy and the prayer that was at the heart of the Standing Rock protection actions. So this one action as a microcosm of everything else that happened before and after. And really, it's when we saw those troops that were led by a private mercenary corporation. We saw them really, really ramping up by the middle of October of 2016. So that was the reason that story is central to the movie.
Mm-hmm. And Rebecca, tell us about the ceremony. Tell us what happened that day.
Well, I couldn't tell you specifics of the ceremony because that day my role was as a legal observer. And so my camera, I had my video camera, and my job wasn't to participate in the ceremony at all or to film the ceremony, but to film the police, which were there from the beginning, circling the site with helicopters. And so I was completely focused just on documenting, kind of protecting the ceremony, not participating in it, but documenting the police action. This was Indigenous Peoples Day, and earlier in that morning there was a water ceremony on the Cannonball River, right where it meets the Missouri River. And then a group of people traveled out to where a 13 teepee poles had been set up with prayer flags around them to enact this dances. So there were folks from the Arctic Circle who were doing their dances, and there were Aztec dancers. And the whole intention of that day was about embodying the unity and respect for the land and the water, that despite centuries of brutal oppression, people have still been able to maintain and remember and practice. And so it was very moving, but again, my role was just sort of as a legal observer.
Mm-hmm. And Jermaine Manju, did you participate in the ceremony that day?
I didn't make it there on time for that ceremony, mm-hmm. So I didn't have a chance. But I know the story of the eagle and the condor. Many elders of mine have shared that with me, and to you know, myself, like I actually, you know, drove to from Vancouver to Standing Rock, very first time I ever been there, and I saw that ceremony of the eagle and condor just sitting there, and understanding the prayer, and I saw what my elders were sharing with me, so that was very powerful in that sense. So in the sense, I participated in that way.
Mm-hmm. And Jermaine, can you tell us more about the whole the symbolic and the beyond symbolic meaning of an eagle and condor ceremony, the prophecies that are related to that? What can you tell us about just the, I suppose, the importance of this ceremony?
Yes. And again, to thank everyone that's made this possible. It was the beginning. We knew many years ago that this was all starting because certain signs was given to us. And the South came up and they brought their medicines, and we from the North came and we had ceremony. Mm-hmm. And we talked, many elders talked, different ages, different age groups of I'm using the English word elder, okay, mm-hmm. But of respect. And they all each hold a different level of the ceremony. And many of these knowledge keepers and knowledge holders that we have within our people, there's very few of us left now. And the symbology of that was to bring those feathers together. And the prophecy that we lived through, it was coming true. It was coming to pass. And we were seeing these signs as many people were put out there to be watchers, to observe, and to be put in a certain place. And in order to do that, you had to be in a state of prayer. You had to be in a state of knowing of yourself with the earth, with all elements around you, your territory, your water, your land, your air, your people. And especially the young ones, because the young ones were the ones that's going to carry that on. And so we were at the point when the ceremony started with the feathers bringing together. It was creating what we call the Thunderbird, you see. And the Thunderbird is what carries the message to the heavens. And we would unite. We would unite under that. And in that uniting, we would create the harmony that was needed to help heal through the ceremony. And our singing and our dancing was to wake up all the energies of all the earth, all everything, all nature, all spirit. And it's not about the human part of it. It was about the spiritual part, the healing of all these years of oppression. All these years of hiding and putting it under and having people come that were selected from their spirit to come and help us bring the prophecy forward, not to brag or talk about it, but to live it, to be together in the camp at Sacred Stone, at Ocheti Shakoi, at Sichahu, which was Rosebud, and at Cannonball River, to be there together, to share, to be one. And mm-hmm. in that spirit, to have the ceremony of all the spiritual beings there and be in that state. And we are still in the state of prayer. We have not removed ourselves out of it, and we won't until the signs mm-hmm. come back and tell us when.
So that actually goes to what I wanted to ask you next is, so what happens when, in the spiritual realms, if you will, what happens when you get together in prayer to bring change, to affect things in a way that will take them away from destruction and exploitation and so on and so forth. And as the ceremony happens, there's this brutality, dozens of police and mercenaries, as you see in the film, and as I think a lot of us remember from the actual time seeing it, and the ceremony is disrupted by these forces that represent the very powers that have been doing the destruction and the raping and the exploiting and so on and so forth. What happens then?
When this was all going on, one of the most powerful things that happened is that there was an energy that happened. It came in, and the buffalo came. The buffalo came over the ridge.
Right.
And it was all females, and they all had female babies with them. That was a sign right then and there, and it was a male, a young man seen it. It's these kinds of things. That, yes, we went through the physical atrocity. We went through the physical abuse that happened to us. We were never actually in those lines of abuse that happened to our people. our elders were taken and hit, and their sacred items destroyed. But those things, that's okay. But our physical being is attached to a spirit. And your spirit has to be strong. Your spirit has to be overcoming. And that's what happened. No matter what happened to our people, even today, they're getting, you know, they've been jailed, or they've been beaten, or they've been marked, and they all these things happen to them. These are things that is not going to be unknown anymore, because this has been happening for a long, long time to our people.
Yeah.
To many people. It's not just the Lakota people. It's all over. But now it's exposed, you see? And that's why it's so hard for our young ones to understand, because we're dealing with a lot of anger, too, a suppression of anger. And that's okay. We just have to learn to start feeling again, because that's where we lost it.
Mm-hmm.
We need to feel now. We need to feel each other and help each other heal. And that's happening. Ceremonies are happening all over now.
Yeah.
And our young ones are getting that healing, because if we heal our young people, that goes into the earth, that goes into the water. And these ones that have been selected and chosen to watch and be observers and document, see, because it's been so many years we've been underground, we've hidden, we've been silent. Now the voice of the eagle and the condor are going to be heard together, not just one, singular, but together.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where that's going to be the power of change. Because, yes, we may have gone through physical abuse, but that's going to change, too.
Mm-hmm.
There's been many things and miracles, and I say the word miracle, but there's been miracles we've saw out to camp, but we saw also on the other side. It's not about just our side. It's about the other side, because we did these things for them, too.
Mm-hmm.
For their generation. We thought of them.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard when we were doing the ceremonies, it was hard because we felt the pain of what was going on with our young people being on the front line. But we had to give our energy and our prayers to them to protect them and help them so they could continue the story, you see. And that's what it was about, is about now our voices are heard. Mm-hmm. Now we need to know we're still here, all of us together. We're not separate anymore. It's not about just an eagle and just a condor. It's about the eagle condor. That's what it's about, and that's a powerful thing. So the ceremony is still going all over. It's spread all over the world now. But we just got to keep it going and help each other. So that's what that is about, and we're still in it. Our young people, we guide them. We still tell them, be calm when you do these things. Be calm. Pray. Mm-hmm. Prayer is a powerful thing when you unite, because that energy is very powerful.
Mm-hmm.
Very powerful. We've seen it at the bridge. We've seen that when all the people came together and they danced. And they stood there with their love and their compassion, not their anger, but their love and compassion for each other, for a human being. So that was powerful. We've seen a lot of things happen there.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Jermaine. Tears in my eyes, Rebecca. You wanted to add something?
Yeah, and Jermaine just said the word compassion. So not only what was the brutality and the power dynamics, you know, centuries-long power dynamics exposed to the rest of the world through this, through that fall and winter. Not just exposed to the eyes, but people's hearts were opened. Millions, tens of millions, I would get venture to say, hearts were opened in compassion. And my extremely brief experience there, I was handled very roughly. In fact, I blacked out. I don't remember what happened after I was first grabbed by the police.
Hmm.
I just remember, you know, sort of coming to, and someone was pushing me and me saying, I'll comply with your orders. You don't have to push me. And I was, you know, very far away. But I ended up with a shoulder injury. And at any rate, I think of that and the whole experience in jail, which, again, was extremely brief and very mild compared to, you know, what many women face. But there were three or four local Lakota women in jail already on, like, trumped up drug paraphernalia charges or very minor misdemeanor charges, but they didn't have money to get bail. And all of them, all four of them were, all they could talk about was their children and how their children were going to be cared for and how their children, what other family members could come and, you know, feed them and take them to school. And it occurred to me, this is another removals, you know, this is another family separations, you know, that the boarding school was, but this time it's taking the moms away from the kids. At any rate, I had, in my, again, my brief experience, I considered this sort of a sacred wound, because what it did was it gave me a deep understanding, and not through reading books, not through anything, but it was a deep spiritual understanding and feeling. Jermaine said feeling, we have to feel again, feeling of that long history of dispossession and oppression, and also of love, of people's love for their children and love for their family. And I, through being placed there, through that, you know, kind of a freak thing that happened to me, I was able to feel that, to understand that, and to have compassion for people in a new way and to relate to people in a new way. And then also to use my platform as a public figure to be able to spread that story. You know, Jermaine was talking about continuing the story and spreading the story everywhere, not just in places where, you know, people hadn't known the stories, but people, you know, and that's what this film is about, really. And I think Paulette can talk more about, you know, how in the creation, I've helped her produce this film, but in the creation of this, it's taken on a life of its own. And it's a thing that, you know, we didn't know Jermaine until last year. Jermaine and Manju, we just met them at a healing ceremony near the Missouri River. And it's a story that is coming through us, and mostly it's coming through women. Mm-hmm. You know, like the Loed Vied camp in Louisiana, as Jermaine, you know, was talking about the female buffalo. It's coming through women. And Paulette, with her decades of experience in filmmaking, beautiful filmmaking, has really created something that I hope the whole world will see and receive the message.
If you're just tuning in, this is A Public Affair on WORT 89.9 FM Madison. This is a rebroadcast of a 2018 conversation. We hope you enjoy it.
Mm-hmm. And I just want to add that, of course, we are watching family separations happening right before our eyes. And again, the majority of these people are indigenous people, mm-hmm. Who are having their children removed from them. And even though it's not very much in the news anymore, there are 13,000 kids from Latin America in America and in U.S. government, basically prisons. A lot of them have been moved to a very desolate area in the desert, in Texas, and it's not even really in the news anymore. So also wanted to say, we haven't received any pledges online anymore so far. WordFM.org, if you want to help the station reach its goal, or, you know, if you want to maybe show your appreciation for these incredible women that are with us today, all five of them, or anyone specific, you know, it would be really great to hear from you. So, Paulette, yes, this is your film, and it is very beautiful. And as I already told you, I cried through much of it. Both because, you know, when you see these legions of police and mercenaries coming at people who are sitting in prayer, that is a painful thing. That makes you cry. But also, when you do show the beauty, and when you do show in visual way the spiritual part of the whole phenomenon that was Standing Rock, that also really brings tears to your eyes. I would like you to talk about a couple things. You can respond to what Rebecca said, and if you also would like to introduce some of the other people who are in the film to our listeners.
Yes, and thank you, Rebecca and Jermaine and Manju and SD. It's just, I just feel so well because at this time, the voices of women and the way that women care for the water and for the earth are rising. And that, I do believe, is what is notable about the movie. It's women, and it's women of a certain age that are carrying these stories. And really important that you see them in their kitchen, and that you see them with their children, and you see them with their spouses, and you know, doing these things that care. You know, it's like Dr. Sarah Jumping Eagle from Standing Rock. She's a pediatrician and just, you know, such an accomplished person. And we see her with her children in her kitchen making food. And for me, that was such an important, it just emerged. It wasn't something that I thought about beforehand, but I realized that this caretaking is a consistent message among the women, especially, and the beautiful men as well who are in this film, that caretaking of the earth, and that just obviously, and as Jermaine said, it's the living of that, you know. And when we were interviewing Jermaine, and she was singing, and she's touching the plants and caring for them, and it's just so present and so obvious. It's not a theory, and you see people right in their environments. And what Rebecca is doing is ironing this beautiful material that she made into ribbon skirts for us. Some of the most breathtaking ribbon skirts I've ever seen. Spent just an enormous amount of time making these beautiful skirts for us to go out to that healing ceremony.
And so Makwa is always in the background. I noticed the dog.
Yes, the dogs are there. You know, that's really important. Exactly. And just the caring for each other. It's the backstory of this film, and it's the story of this film. It's these small gestures. So Sarah Jumping Eagle, and we have Aztec dancers from Berkeley, California. Adriana Betty and her dance troupe from Berkeley, California is in the movie. And we also have Will Parrish, who's an investigative journalist, who exposed the tiger swan, who are the private mercenary firm that was really pretty much in charge of Central Command out at Standing Rock. He exposed the emails that really proved just how deeply this private mercenary corporation was involved in shaping the narrative and depicting the water protectors as terrorists and dangerous people, and just how destructive that was, and how supportive people like Will Parrish and Rebecca Campbell, who are not indigenous, but they are there bringing their, knowing that this is all of us that are together, bringing their skills to this action, and really understanding deeply that their skills intersect in really important ways. And another water protector that we meet is our nephew, Brennan Nastasio, who disarmed an infiltrator who worked for the pipeline company. This infiltrator was dressed as a water protector, so everybody thought he was a water protector, and he had an assault rifle and was driving his truck very dangerously, and people stopped him. He got out of his truck and pointed his rifle directly at BJ and other water protectors. That man was not charged. BJ has been charged with felonies at the federal level. And also the story of Standing Rock. So, you know, just a really wide swath of people who came to the actions. But I think the connecting thread is this heart, is this love. And the fact that love is in that title is really important. People who brought their love and their intentions to this action.
Mm-hmm. So we have only 3 minutes left. I think I would actually like to end with Manju, because Yo Ann Germain was talking about how this whole the whole thing that is happening and that has been happening is to support the youth, and the youth really are the ones who started the sit-in, or, you know, they started by running against the pipeline at Standing Rock, and the pipeline was put down. It is in the earth there and under the water. But it ain't the end, is it? And the future is yours. So what would you like to say in the last 2 minutes that we have left?
You know, even though that the pipeline is in the ground, even though the oil is flowing, it goes back to what Maituni was saying about the fact that the movement hasn't stopped.
Mm-hmm.
Something was ignited there. You know, and I believe that those flames that those youth and the grandmothers, when they came together to start this was not like an intention that it was like thought out or anything. It came together by heart and compassion and spirit in combination. And so that movement is still being carried in all the directions, in all four directions. And that flame is lit, and that's it. It's, you know, you see a lot of youth out there advocating for water rights. You see, and they come in all different colors. It's also, but that flame, that passion of understanding and love and commitment to the land that we live on, that we feed off of, that we commune with, it's not stopping. It's a fire you cannot stop. And it doesn't matter how many boots come and, you know, try to quash our dreams or try to quash our spirit or try to quash our prayers. Because I can say something that's really deep in me is that I came out in prayer.
Mm-hmm.
And I brought the medicines that I had to bring from this side of the continent of Turtle Island, and I brought them to Standing Rock because I was there in prayer.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll tell you, all the youth there, it's they're going to be their driving force. It already is.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, nothing's over.
Yeah,
it's ongoing, and it's real.
And Manju, we are out of time. Thank you, ladies, so much. Manju Dot, Jermaine Trammell, Paulette Moore, Rebecca Campbell. My producer, too, says thank you to these women and their beautiful stories. Love to all of you. Thank you so much. The film, again, is on Monday here in Madison. You can gather at 5:30.
It's also streaming on Free Speech TV, 8 o'clock Central Time. So if you have access to Free Speech TV anywhere in the world, you can watch it there.
Uh-huh. And the comment, actually, as I learned, is from Leslie, not from Michelle, but that's fine. I'm Esti Dinor. We'll be talking again next week. I want to thank Dave and Nancy and Summer and Michelle. Good job, Summer. First time he engineered. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Love
Bye.
You.
Thank you.
High crime, treason, we broadcast in sedition. Like the Wall Street Morning Afternoon Edition. Commandeering airwaves from unknown positions. Live and direct, becoming never pre-recorded. With information that would never be re-reported. Disregard the mainstream, media distorted. We come and listen and supported. Live and direct, becoming never pre-recorded.
You're listening to WORT 89.9 FM, Madison.
We come and listen and support it. Ha ha.
Mike and Marie. Don't say this about them.
Don't take no prisoners if you can't afford to feed none. Don't start no fights if you cannot predict the outcome. Don't make donations where you cannot get your dough back. The apathetic bull, to send them all your Prozac. I will not climb into your telephone tree, and hell no, you cannot put me on hold. It's the same recorded message you've been singing all along. Keep handing us the Bible while you're walking off with all the gold. The bureaucratic office sends you merry-go-rounding, while the KKK police the streets by bloodhounding. Interest on the credit card.
This is Pacifica Radio's Letters and Politics. On today's show,
in this situation, there is no war. And we are now classifying all immigrants, many of whom are actually coming here to seek asylum. And the reality that we're not discussing, right, is that there has been a dehumanization and a criminalization of people from Venezuela. But most of them are actually escaping pretty dire situations. They're asylum seekers. And so the moment you start to classify asylum seekers broadly to be enemy combatants or to be enemy aliens, that's the moment we should all start to worry, because this trend, where does it end?
A conversation on how wartime powers are now being used during a time of not being at war. Our guest is Raquel Aldana. She is the Martin Luther King Jr. Professor of Law at the University of California, Davis. We'll also speak to historian of Latin America, Miguel Tinker Salas. That's next on Letters on Politics. But first, the news.
Debbie Russ with the BBC News. Hello. President Trump and his intelligence chiefs have played down a mistake in which a journalist was invited onto a messaging group where he saw plans for a US attack in Yemen. The US president said it was a glitch and that he stood by his national security advisor, Michael Waltz. From Washington, here's Nomia Iqbal.
President Trump says he stands by his national security adviser Michael Waltz, the man who added journalist Jeffrey Goldberg to the group. The chat about the attacks on Iran-backed Houthi rebels also involved Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth and the Vice President J.D. Vance. Mr. Trump said it had no impact on the military operations.